I wish we had that little moment recorded.
Yeah.
Gosh, you said it right before we started. Yeah, it's now after you said
this thing
that.
On.
Oh. Yeah. How's it going?
Oh, good.
Good morning.
I got to pluck the hairs out of my nose. We were just talking about that.
Not now.
Every single time. You know, did you guys ever do an advertisement and then when you go look at yourself in the camera, you get like four big hairs sticking out of your nose and you have to go back and do it again?
I've not had that particular situation, no.
It only happens to me. Okay. I'm the only one that has hair growing out of his nose.
No. I just have never, I have definitely a hair growing out of my nose. I just have not had that particular situation.
Your grooming habits are in line with going on camera. Mine aren't. I usually find out what I need to do after I shoot everything.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's my
problem. Know, people are starting their weekend off with us talking about nose hairs. Let's just keep that in mind.
Did you ever shoot a video and then you go and one of your eyebrow hairs is tangled in with one of your eyelashes? That ever happened?
No, but I do have I have a mole in my eyebrow that everybody comments on all the time. And so it makes some of my eyebrow hairs stick up on occasion. And so I have this little flag that sticks out of my face.
The other day I went to adjust my glasses and I grabbed an eyebrow hair while I grabbed my, I'm like, oh, okay, that needs to be fixed. That's embarrassing.
One of my kids said something the other day about how weird it was that old people had ear hair. And I was like, well, buddy, it's not just, quote, old people, you know.
You'll get there.
Yeah.
You'll get
anyway.
There. What's up?
What are you guys up to? What's going on?
What am I doing? I'm working. I'm building a kitchen island. There was one there I guess it's been there for about 8 or 9 years. Taylor built it, but it has one level on the bottom. And I collected more and more junk since I emptied out my dad's house. I ended up taking, my dad had lots of Pyrex. So I took a lot of my dad's Pyrex. And so my kitchen island has just gotten crowded. And then Rachel says, let's redo this. You know what it was? I made the industrial style side table for the leather shop. And she's like, that's beautiful. You should make one just like that for the kitchen island. And the light bulb went off. And so that's what I made this week. And I replaced that one that was there with one that's got two levels in it. And it's a little more stylish. It's a little bit more stout. And last night, Brian and I wrestled it through the door. We had two attempts before we realized we had to take off both doors, the door to the kitchen and the door to the, my headlamp just went out. But let me see this.
He's recording in a cave in case you can't see him and he needed his spelunking gear to work.
Anyway, so I built the kitchen island. We had to get it inside. And so I had to remove two doors, the screen door, storm door, and the actual door to get it in. But I measured 10 times to make sure that it would fit. And then I put it all together down at the shop. I said, it's fairly heavy with thick steel. And I glued all the wood in just to show off some type on. I used this type of silicone they sell. And at the end of the day, when everything was dried, I was like, oh, now I have to carry the entire thing. I thought I was going to carry it without pieces in it and make it lighter. And we had to wrestle it through the door. Two attempts, it didn't fit. And it seems like it weighs probably 150, maybe 200 pounds, wrestling it in sideways. Hey, long story. We got it in. It's in. Everything works. I had to take the doors off and put them back on. You'll see it all in the video. So, yeah, that's it. I used the same top that was on the old one. So I sanded it in place and refinished it right there in the kitchen with some food safe stuff, this food safe stuff that Total Boat makes. So that was my project for the week. It'll probably be out this weekend. I started editing this morning before we get started, going through my footage. And that's it, just a general cleanup because the family's coming. My family comes typically every Thanksgiving. That's fun. They'll say, and it's funny when people come this far to hang out, they literally are staring at their watch the whole time to like, have we spent enough time here? Let's go.
Really?
Yeah, no, we have a good time, but everybody's got stuff to do and other families to visit. You know, they all have their own in-laws and stuff. And so and my brother's kids now are at the age where now we're like, they get in, check in, and then like, go get beer, like disappear. Go get beer and disappear into one of the barns to drink. So but it's fun. It's obviously going to be fun. I haven't seen my mom in a minute. My mom is coming up.
So cool.
Yeah. So I'm just getting the house ready. And in the process of that, this guy, Mike, who comes to the house often and paints rooms, he's painting one of the bedrooms. Not in preparation for this family gathering, but just in general. So you might hear me interacting with Mike a little bit during the podcast. He comes and goes right by my office. In the process of cleaning up, I was like, it's time to get this room redone. So Mike's scraping it and plastering it. So there might be interruptions. That's the only reason I bring that up. I'm sorry cool. I brought that up. I shouldn't have said it.
Yeah, now he's guaranteed not to show up at all. Yeah. Yeah. That's the way it goes. Yeah, it's Thanksgiving week for everybody who's not in the U.S., thing we do. We have Thanksgiving and everybody
ends up tomorrow.
Family and stuff. Yeah, it is, which is really weird. It's weird that it's November. It's weird that it's 2025. It's all weird.
I got a credit card the other day. I got a credit card replaced and it expires in 30. So seeing that number on a credit card is like, whoa.
Yeah. 30. We'll all be dead by then. It'll be fine.
Yeah, it don't matter.
That's like way in the future.
Yeah.
Cool. But David, you have people coming too, right? Did you say that?
Yes. We have never hosted ever, but we really wanted to give mom a break this year. So it'll be fun. I'm smoking a turkey. I did it last year and then it over to mom's. And so I've got 1 year under my belt of smoking a turkey and that came out really good. So
how long you needed to smoke it for?
This is a 14-pound turkey, and I believe it's around 4 to 4.5 hours.
At 400 degrees or higher?
It's lower than that. I don't have the details in front of me. But
I just wonder. Yeah. Wow.
So, yeah. So that'll be fun. I got a video coming out in the next couple of days. At least by the end of the weekend, I made a coat rack, and I was going to work on the cassette tape that we were talking about, and I got an email from the sponsor last Friday of the video, and they're like, hey, just so you're aware that video approvals need to be in by Monday because of the holiday weekend, we won't be in after Wednesday. And I was like, oh, there's no way I can get this done by then. So I had to come up with a project that I could make in one day. And so I designed this coat rack, and I spent the whole day designing it, just going through ideas. Nothing was working. And I came up with this idea. It's more of a sculptural thing. So when there's no coats on it, it looks like a wall sculpture. And the cool thing is, like, it's got, I don't know, somewhere in like 50 pieces, but they're all the same width and same thickness. So you get to cut all the pieces all at once. And then the fun is in the glue up. And I think it came out really good.
That sounds like a t-shirt. The fun is in the glue up.
The fun is in the glue up. Yeah. Glue ups are very stressful for me. I talk about this in the video actually, where I don't know why, but my brain goes into stress mode every glue up. It could be something simple, but that's when projects go wrong for me. It's like I didn't think of something, or glue is squeezing out where it shouldn't, or pieces aren't going together. And so my brain just thinks I'm being chased by a tiger anytime I'm gluing something up.
I usually break glue ups into categories. So if I have to glue 10 planks together, for instance, for a tabletop, or 5 planks, I'll glue 2 to 2 and then I'll break them up in groups as long as I have the time, instead of trying to have 5 slippery pieces or glue everywhere, trying to, you would have biscuits or dominoes, but still it's messy. So I do 2, then I let it dry, then I do 2, let it dry.
David, talking about your response to like glue ups, like it gets stressful and everything. I noticed it on a regular basis, but it hit me this week. I was doing something on camera, and I always find myself rushing when the camera is running. Like I'm gonna run out of tape or something. Like I don't know what the thing is, but as soon as I hear
anxiety
recorded,
of knowing you have to deal with that footage.
Like now I don't even deal with the footage. That's the thing. Like Anthony edits it, But I guess part of it is I've always tried to shoot lean, and I don't want to have an hour long clip of putting these screws in. And so it's like, I got to put them in fast, but then that makes everything messy, and you can tell that I'm in a hurry, and there's no reason for it, but I catch myself doing that all the time.
Pro tip. Well, speed it up. Nobody will notice.
Well, we do, and that's the thing. I don't know why I even, care about the time, but.
But you're trying to be efficient, like, so the camera's rolling and you have to move this piece to this piece and then put them together. And so you want to do it in a nice fluid motion, but then you drop the piece and now you've screwed up the shot, but it's really not that important. But to you, it's the whole world. And yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
Hitting,
well,
hitting the record flips that switch in the brain where you just go into, we are working now.
Yeah, and it's weird. I'm not sure why that is. I mean, I can understand why it is, but at this point, I've been doing this for a really long time. All of us
Yeah.
have. So I'm not sure
There
why it's
is
still
a
a thing.
small, even though you're working alone and you're pre-recording everything, there is a slight, people are watching now. Whereas when the camera's not on, you loosen your belt and you're sloppy, it doesn't matter. But when people are watching is when that when you hit that record button, even though there's nobody in the room and you know you could change any of it, there is that slight, okay, now
It's a performance.
the audience is in the room with me. So you do get that anxiety. I feel that.
Yeah, it's like for me, I think it's about it's some sort of conservation of
No, there's always that.
time or something. Like I don't know that it's as much about me people watching. Maybe it is, I don't know. But it definitely feels like I'm taking too long, which is totally irrelevant. You know, it doesn't matter at all. 'Cause yeah, everything's gonna be sped up. It's gonna be chopped down. It would make more sense to get a better shot of doing something well that takes a long time. That would be the better end goal than to try to do it quickly. And I don't know. It's weird. I'm weird. Anyway.
We're all weird.
Yeah.
I have this thing in an 8 hour day, I try to get no more than an hour of footage. Because I do the editing myself,
Interesting.
so I want the least amount of footage as possible. So we record with the mindset of we're kind of recording into camera. We're editing into the recording.
Yeah, I do that a lot.
And
My edits are real easy, usually.
so I and it, some most of the time it ends up with a little bit more than an hour, but you know, hour 10, hour and 15 for a full day, that's pretty manageable for me. It's when it gets past 2 hours, I'm like, oh, you got so much footage to go through, and it just feels overwhelming, and it's
Yeah.
all boring because, you know, every cut at the table saw looks like every other cut at the table saw.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of things taking a while. So yesterday, no, not yesterday. Monday, today's Wednesday. Monday, I went out. It was like Monday morning. Okay, I'm starting the roof on the pool house. This is it. Got the roofing material. It's out at the farm. I'm gonna go get it. We're gonna start jamming on the roof. And all the pieces I had ordered, special ordered in the right color, had shown up, you know, and I'm like, good to go. So go to lunch with a friend, do some stuff in the morning. I go out, I load up the roofing from the farm, I bring it back here, start unloading it, and my neighbor is mowing. It's November, it's the middle of November. The grass has not grown in several weeks. The neighbor's mowing not to cut the grass, but to move the leaves. Now, I love my neighbors. They're great. I've known them my entire life, and they keep their landscaping and their home very nicely. Like they do a really great job. And so my dogs are upset about something. When the leaves fall, they want to get rid of the leaves. And so they start mowing to blow the leaves into certain areas so they can scoop them on a big, you know, like sheet and drag them to the thing and dump them. So I'm like, well, I can't. The first thing I have to do is say something to camera. It's the first, I got to put the drip edge down. And I like had this bit where I got to say drip edge and then snap it in place. But I can't because the mower's going. And so I'm like, just waiting, you know, it's fine. Waiting, waiting, looking for stuff to do. Can't do much. And then the blower comes out. The daughter's
You
over.
gotta
So
send
there's
the
three of
PA
them.
over there. You gotta send the PA over. Could you please turn that off with making a movie? Just
Can we
pretend
give you a gift card if you'll stop doing that?
it's funny.
So then the blower's out, and this goes on for 2.5 hours. Just like, let's just push all the leaves over there. Now let's go on the other side of the house and push all those leaves into this little spot, and then all those, and then the front yard, and I move stuff around, and, you know, like tried to prep things and tried to just whatever I could do. So I go through all this stuff. Finally, they're done. I'm going to go start working on the roof, right? So I pick up one of the sheets and I stand it up, the roofing sheets, and I stand it up against the building. And I turn to the camera and I'm like, this 12-foot section is blah, 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 what I do the thing. And then I climb up on the roof and I slide the panel up there and I throw it down and I look at it and it's 10 feet, not 12 feet. So my plan originally was to use this roof that I had previously from another project that I never used. I was going to have two 12-foot sections and overlap them. You can overlap those pieces and put butyl tape in between them to seal it. And it's an okay thing to do. So that was my plan because the roof is 20 feet and 6 inches.
Oh,
but I
so
have 10-foot sections. So I can't use the sections that I
have. Overlap and you'll leave an empty space.
Yes. So I was like sitting on the roof after this full afternoon of frustration of not being able to do the thing. Then I'm like looking on the website. Okay, well, I guess now I have to order more roof. How long is that going to take? I'm like, well, I can use the pieces I have on the short side of the roof. They're longer than they need to be over there. Okay, I'll just start over there. So, well, my headphones just died all of a sudden. So I go over there and lay a sheet down and I go to get my screws and I realize the screws are not the right kind of screws because they're too tall. So I'm like, oh, okay, now I got to go to the store and get new screws. So I look up the kind of screws I need. They're like pancake head. They have to go through metal into wood. Start looking them up. Every store
with the rubber
in
grommet.
Town, they are, no, not the rubber grommet ones. That's what I bought. These are standing seam. They get covered by the next sheet.
Oh,
so
okay.
They have to be really flat. Every store in town can special order these screws, but they don't have them in stock. I'm like, what in the world? Although I didn't think about Fastenal.
One of those days.
Anyway, so I get to the end of this day. This is Monday afternoon. I don't even know how we got to this. I don't know why I'm telling you this story. But I got to the end of the day. I had gotten absolutely nothing
because it shows
done.
What we're thankful for.
Well, that's true. I got nothing done at all. Not a single thing. I ordered $800 more in roofing and $50 more in screws, and I don't have either one of them yet, and I'm not going to have them until next week. So, yeah. So let's talk about what we're thankful for from this past year.
Great transition. This is why we're pros.
I don't know how I got to that. I don't know what we were talking about. I was trying to be productive, and I thought I had everything, you know, planned out. And the roofing is already something that I've never done before. And so, you know, I'm a little bit anxious about the wrapping the pieces in the right way to keep water out. And there's like, you know, every kind of roof has different types of trim things and different orders that you might do things in, depending on what if you're using this or this or whatever. So I'm already kind of anxious about it. And then I got to like actually start. Let's do it. Nope. You got to wait. Let's do it. Nope. You got the wrong thing. Okay. Let's go over here. Nope. You got the wrong thing. And it was just like one thing after another. Yeah. And so I didn't get anything done. And I can't get anything done on that project for at least a week, which is, I don't know. It's very
Let's make another video for now.
Yeah. I think I'm going to have to. The video that I have coming out this weekend is a collapsible fire pit. So I took down our stone fire pit that I did years ago. Our backyard has just changed a bunch. And so I was like, well, we can just go buy a little metal fire pit and, you know, throw it in the backyard and be done. But then I started thinking about not wanting it to be out all the time and maybe making something that we could store away, but not, you know, something big enough to be useful, but not too big to store. And then that led me down. What if we made something that could come apart into multiple pieces and nest within itself? So I did a design in Fusion and then laser cut it in cardboard and assembled the whole thing in cardboard and then cut it out of steel and then welded the whole thing together. And I'll spoil the video. It's still worth watching, but I got to the end of it and had a fire pit that worked just fine. But I was like, you know, I should have just bought one. Like it, the idea of making it collapsible was a good thing to try to figure out, and it works, but it just wasn't worth the effort. You know, it wasn't worth the result of It was still fun to do, and I'm glad I did it, but I couldn't possibly tell somebody else that this is the way to go about, you know what I mean? Just go to Lowe's and buy a fire pit. Yeah.
The problem with fire pits is even they're crazy expensive, but they're all out of that really, really thin metal. And after two seasons, you know, whatever coating is on there is burnt off, and then it goes through a winter and it gets rusty. And then year three, like it's rusting through. You get all these holes.
When I bought this house, and most people know that Patrick, my electrician friend, he grew up here. Coincidentally, we made friends years later, but this house is owned by his grandparents, his grandmother's brothers.
So I don't think I knew that.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah. No. Yeah. Patrick, my electrician friend, Patrick Reynolds, who does all my electrical work. He's doing the whole graveyard house now. Patrick, when he was a child, he's 62. When he was a child, his family owned this house. And another weird, weird coincidence. My mother was a young girl in Rockaway Beach. Her landlord announced, "We just bought a summer house in the 50s. We just bought a summer house in upstate New York." And my mother's landlord would go to that house. My mother, when she was a young child, lived in Rockaway Beach with her family. And then my grandparents moved the family. My grandfather moved the family to Florida. So those in the 50s, when my mother lived in Rockaway Beach, her landlord would go to a house every weekend. And that house was this house.
What?
Yeah. And that person was Patrick's grandmother's brother.
How is that possible?
Isn't that
That's
bizarre?
Crazy.
Well, we're all like all my descendants and friends and family are from Rockaway Beach, New York, like the Ramones song. So it's not completely crazy, but that this house in the middle of nowhere compared to 150 miles from Rockaway Beach in the middle, you can go anywhere in upstate New York in any direction. And that's a crazy story. But that being said, there's a cauldron in the backyard that is 36 inches in diameter, must weigh about 1,000 pounds. It's 1 inch thick cast iron steel with two pegs sticking out of it so it could be picked up. Patrick said it was there ever since he was a little kid. So that's as far back as I can go that anybody that I could speak to about the house. And he said it was always there in the middle of the yard and everybody had fires in it. And it's been there and we have fires around it. And me and the Total Boat crew, every Maker Camp, we cook a fire in the back. And I made a barbecue ring for it. It was one of my most successful videos. There's just a plasma cut ring, a 36 inch ring that's about 36 on the outside and the inside is about 8 inches in. So you have an 8 inch grill around the fire. So when the fire is like slowed down and it's just like red coals, you can barbecue on it. We did it a couple times over the years. So I found another cauldron for the graveyard house to burn the debris at the graveyard house. And I found a cauldron online for $400. It's just almost the same one that I have in the backyard. It weighs 200 or 300, maybe 400 pounds. I don't know. It's cast iron. So it probably weighs 500 pounds. And I was able to get that on Facebook Market. So if anyone's looking for an indestructible fire pit, find yourself a cauldron. And in fact, at Maker Camp, there's always junk guys selling junk at Maker Camp. I bought Rob. This is a funny, Rob's going to say this, he's going to laugh. So there was a cauldron for sale at one of the junk guys, and my truck happened to be right there. And this was a smaller one. We were able to pick it up, two people. And I said, how much for the cauldron? He goes, give me $150. So I only had $50 on me, so I can hold it for me. And then I saw Rob, I'm like, I got you a gift. I got you a cauldron. He goes, really? Where? I go, oh, the guy over there had it. I go, I need $100 to pay him off. Give me $100.
I got you a gift.
I don't think I ever paid him back. So, but what you need are these cauldrons that are either from a smelting place or whatever. Huh. Sometimes too, they have the cauldrons are made out of the round end of a propane tank, a big propane tank. They cut off the round end and you find those on Facebook Market. So if anyone's looking for a fire pit that's semi-indestructible, I'll send you guys pictures of my cauldrons.
Well, this one, I ended up making it out of 8-inch steel, which at the time ordering it, it didn't feel like that was going to be very thick. But then, man, once I got all the pieces put together, it's pretty thick.
Yeah.
It's heavy.
Yeah.
So. But I made one as a gift for
Tony. It's in one of my videos. I made it right after we did the show. So it was like the summer of 21. I made one for Tony out of 3/8 steel that plugs together. It's like these things all like, it's like, I think it's six-sided. No, that one I welded together. Anyway, that was extremely heavy.
Yeah.
Tony, I made that for Tony Relu's barbecue. But that was cool. All plasma cut.
Well, that was my spiel of, you know, what I've done. What we usually do for this kind of Thanksgiving episode is talk about the previous year and, you know, like what we're thankful for from the year. Mm. I think there's always stuff to be really grateful for. And I feel like, you know, I guess as we go on, as we get older, I am more aware of things that I need to be grateful for. Not that we have more than we used to necessarily, but like looking back on this previous year, I mean, one thing that really sticks out to me is the 500 event that we did.
Yeah, that was a special day.
Just, I mean, the willingness of Carolina to put that thing together and, you know, to put money at making something for us to come to and other people to come to for free. Like, it was really amazing that they were willing to put that together.
When we did the first one, it was such a special day. I think all three of us were like, we can't top it, so let's not try it.
Yeah.
I mean, that was kind of the sentiment when we got to like every other milestone. We're like, yeah, that was so good. Let's not try and replace that memory or whatever. But the 500 was a really good compliment to that. It really was. It was really special. And how many people came out? So many people came from so far away. So, yeah, I was very thankful for that day. It was a really beautiful day.
And one thing that really stuck out to me from that day that I was also really grateful for is, you know, the three of us have talked about how we've been doing the show for a long time and the numbers of people listening has not grown, you know, in like an up and to the right graph of the time that we've been listening to it. It has kind of that number stopped changing for the most part or slowed down. And that can feel like when you just look at it from purely a number standpoint, from like a metrics, which is what we all have to do all the time, that feels like, well, it's not growing. It's not reaching more people. It's not useful to more people or, you know, in the same way that some of the other stuff we do is. But at the same time, when you go to an event like that and you have several hundred people coming up to you that you've met 10 years ago at a similar event and, you know, people are coming up and just telling you these wonderful things and grateful that we just get together and do the silly thing. It was a good gut check for me about that growth is not always the thing. Yeah. Like growth is great and it's useful in a lot of ways, but sometimes it's just about being and just about working and just about consistency and stuff like that. So the people that, you know, would come up and say, I've been listening for this long and, or, you know, I'm glad that was able to support on Patreon for this long. Like that stuff it's easy to forget the people that make up metrics. You know what I mean? It's
easy to forget numbers.
Yeah, they're not numbers. They're people who are active participants in what we do. And so I'm grateful for that gut check that I had and for the people that are willing to come travel to something like that and encourage us and talk to us. And I mean, it was a really special, interesting day in a lot of ways that I didn't expect for me. But.
Yeah.
What made it even more special was how Carolina just took over everything and we didn't have to worry about anything. All we had to do was just show up and enjoy the day. And we weren't worried about timing or this and that and logistics. And it was just, it just made that day so much more special.
Yeah.
Yep.
For sure. Well, what else from this year has stuck out to you guys? What's been?
You know, this is a weird thing. It's been on my mind and I'll tell you why. So I'm thankful for the odd friendships that develop on Instagram with people that you'll never meet in person. And some of these relationships you make with people that you never will meet or have more impact on you than you might realize. And I'll tell you a story. So there's a guy named Brian Wittan. And I don't know if I've ever forwarded any of his memes to you. I've been talking to him online now for about 4 or 5 years, maybe longer. And he's so quirky. He's actually kind of popped up when I was doing my denim stuff because he's an influencer in the denim fashion world. and he's a really cool cat. He's just a cool dude, cool cars, motorcycles, and he never had a huge following, but his timeline was curated really, really well. Funny stuff. And then I started sending him stuff, and then that's how we developed a friendship, because I would send him stuff that I would never post, but I know he would post, like cool throwback clips of music and bands, and he really just did exactly what he wanted, and he was a real free spirit, and he would post clips of him laughing with his bros, and it was just so, so touching. And I introduced him to Graz, and Taylor made friends with him online and in our own capacity. And I know Graz might have communicated with him a little bit. And in the last year, he and I communicated a lot. Like, I would send him videos of the Woody that I was making, because he was a car buff. And, you know, I showed him my Mercedes because he could appreciate good design. And we developed a friendship. And he saw me making brass knuckles. He's like, can you make me some knuckles for my birthday? And so I made him a couple sets of wooden brass knuckles for his birthday last year. And the other day, he had a lot of celebrity friends. Like I said, I didn't ever expect it to meet him. And we never were in the same circles ever. And the other day, one of his celebrity friends had posted a clip that said, Brian, I'm so sorry for your loss. I'm so sorry that, you know, we'll never see. And I said, what's going on? And it turns out he and I were texting Sunday, back and forth Sunday through Instagram. It turns out Monday, Tuesday, he got killed in a motorcycle accident. Ugh. 55 years old. And literally for the last 3 years solid, possibly every single day, he would send me a meme or two or five, and some days 10. Like, I don't know how he would like keep up with it. All crazy, quirky, funny stuff. And all at the same time, maintaining he's one of these cool guys that just would find cool stuff. And he was consulting with companies to like, how could be cool. Anyway, he's gone now. Just suddenly, just like that. And I don't know the details. I don't know his family. But this one of his celebrity friends that posted about it, I wrote back to her, never expecting her to write back to me. I said, what happened? I didn't know Brian personally, but we knew each other through the Instagram account for the last several years. And she wrote back. She said he touched everybody. He connected so many people. He was he's irreplaceable. She said, and you know, he would be sad that we're sad, but he died in a motorcycle accident, and that's it. We could just cherish his memory. Hmm. So that's a touching story. And I didn't know him personally. And, you know, Rachel knew his girlfriend coincidentally through, I think, the meditation world. And she'd come to find out, she made some phone calls and come to find out that they just split up. So she didn't know her that well, but it is a tragedy that, you know, I'm just going to say this one PSA. Don't ride a motorcycle. I haven't ridden my Vespa. I gave my Harley away to my brother, who thankfully just sold it, so he won't be riding it. I gave my Honda 650 XLR away to a friend. Don't ride motorcycles. They're just so dangerous. We lost Dave last year. So Elm City Dave died on a motorcycle last year. So anyway, I don't mean to get so somber, but
yeah.
I'm thankful for the friendships that we make online of the people that we're never going to meet.
Yeah.
Because they do have meaning. Even though they might seem just like a flippant conversation with somebody, they do have an impact.
Yeah. So. One thing, thanks for sharing that. That's tough. One thing that we hear from people a lot is like, it almost feels like a throwaway line at the end of a nice message that somebody gives, but I think there's actually a lot to it. They say like, what you do means way more than you'll ever know. We get similar things to that.
Yeah.
At the end of messages. And a few times over the years, I've had people explain that to me, you know, say like, you didn't know this, but so-and-so that you met this one time had this happen to them and they told me this, or I, you know, was listening to this episode one time and it really hit me this way and it helped me with whatever. And so I think it is not a throwaway line, even though it feels like, from my perspective, it feels like a nice thing to say, you know. But I think the truth is, what you're saying is that those little interactions that we have with people have a ripple effect that we can't possibly know about, that we can't possibly see. And people's you know, conversations with us have a ripple effect through our lives that they don't know anything about. So yeah, 100% agree that even the little interactions we have with people, it has an effect. It's important.
It was funny because Brian was, he was like a cool hunter. That was a word I couldn't find a minute ago. You even see these guys that are men and women that are cool hunters. They're just like, they just find joy in every little thing. He would post like his feed was amazing. And every time anybody I introduced his feed to, I'd be like, oh my God, I can't stop it. He has one post up on his thing. Just one post. He only follows one person and he doesn't have a big following, maybe in the couple of thousand, like maybe 10,000 at the most. But his feed for people who are interested in fashion and art, it was amazing. It was so well curated. He'd post like Japanese guys making a teapot or guys making shingles. Like he really saw the beauty in all these really simple tasks and, you know, so-called simple tasks. Obviously they're not that simple, but by curating it in a feed next to all these other things. And then right next to it would be, you know, Teddy Pendergrass singing a song, you know, from 1970, you know, like just so many dynamic next to just a shot of a car in the street that he thought was cool, you know, like a cool old car. And, And so when he acknowledged me and started appreciating me, I really felt like I get a table, I get a seat at the table with the cool kids. I really felt that. Because I was watching him from afar for so long, and then I started interacting with him and then sending him things that I thought and then when I see he would post the thing that I thought was cool that he would enjoy, I was like, oh, okay, now I'm in. Mm. And then we started talking about stuff here and there, but it really was just goofy. It was really just goofy, fun stuff. It was nothing serious. And then I gave him a tour of the shop once, and he's like, I'm definitely coming. I told him about the go-kart thing. He's like, I'm coming. Anyway, that's just, you know, that happened yesterday morning.
Hmm.
I found that out. Yeah.
Wow. David, anything stick out to you from this last year?
Well, sticking with the online theme, I'm really thankful for people who are very positive and promote encouragement in the comments. Like, not just for me, most of the comments are amazing and it's awesome. It feels good to see those comments. And then when I'm looking at Reddit or Discord and people just encouraging or saying how cool other people's work is, makes me happy. Like you might not realize how much you can make a person's day by just saying something nice, mm-hmm. Even if it's in a comment. You know, maybe it's your cousin on Facebook just posted something he knitted, and just leaving a little bit of encouragement and positivity and some good feedback can really make someone's day. And it's making videos for 12 years. Sometimes you forget that those people are actual people who are saying nice things, and I am just trying to recognize.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, I agree with that totally. You know, I think at least my tendency for looking at comments is always going to be to expect the worst, and so when you know what I mean, or expect something negative, like you know, sort of pushback or something, and. Yeah, the positive stuff is a breath of fresh air. It's encouraging.
The constructive criticism. I've learned so much from the constructive criticism that people have posted in the comments. Even if it's just word, like sometimes somebody will be like, you do something and somebody will just say, I can't even think, they'll be like thermoform. You know, like I'm like, what? What is that? How does thermoform relate to what I'm doing? You know, and then I go and I Google it and I'm making up that word, but I'm like, oh, that is exactly what I should have done here. You know, even if it doesn't
happens all
like,
the time.
It doesn't have to be like, you should have done thermoform. You know, it's just like, oh, by the way, just like and those words, those comments do connect.
Yeah.
They do land.
Yeah. So many times I've been thrown off on a tangent. I'm like, I didn't even know that existed. What? Yes. This would have changed the whole project.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I've had really, really positive, constructive feedback to the whole like pool house, like all the videos so far.
Construction feedback?
Yes. But it's been so encouraging because I think I went into the whole thing just being like, man, I'm going to get destroyed in the comments on that. You know, like I don't know what I'm doing.
You're being very humble though. You keep reminding us that you don't know what you're doing. So I think
that's
really
hedging. Like I shouldn't have to do that.
Great backdoor. It really gets you an out.
Well, yeah, but that's me hedging, like trying to just like pre-justify mistakes, which I know is kind of a dumb thing to do. And like,
I'm doing the same thing with the Graveyard House. I'm like, I really don't know what I'm doing, even though like I'm supposed to be this like guy that knows how to do everything. I hated construction. I never loved doing it.
Yeah.
But I'm figuring it out and I'm not showing the things that I know it totally hack, and I'm doing the things that I think are cool. Those are the things I highlight.
Yeah. Yeah, but yeah. To mirror what you're saying, I'm definitely grateful for the positive stuff, because it is helpful to me, like to not feel like I'm as lost as I feel like I am when it comes to that stuff.
Yeah,
you know, and the encouraging like correction stuff is also great too, because it's a lot of it I've been able to work back in and still fix and stuff, which is, you know, if somebody was just telling me and I was an idiot, that wouldn't help me go back and change things. But telling me, hey, this, you forgot to do this, or you can also do it this way, you know, I can still work that stuff in, which is great. Just gives me a better result in the end. Another thing that I'm really grateful for that I didn't expect this year was the show that I've traveled a couple of times to do.
Yeah.
It's called Made Possible. I was really unsure. In fact, I turned this thing down a couple of times already before we finally got to it. And they kept coming back and saying like, no, I mean, we could find somebody else, but we really would like you to be the host. And I didn't understand why. I thought it was more of just like, you know, we need a face that people might recognize and we got to stick a face on this thing. But then after, you know, getting there and to the first shoot and meeting the crew and meeting the company and understanding like the idea of the whole thing, I'm really grateful that I'm getting to be a part of it. And I don't know if we're even going to do any more of them. It may be over. I don't know yet. But meeting those people on the crew has been like really positive, because I learn stuff from what they do, watching them film and watching them set up shots and the way that they talk about stuff. They're people I would hang out with if we lived anywhere close to each other. You know, we would watch movies together and hang out and talk about that stuff. And it's been a really good time, and it's pushed me to, I don't know, I can be overly serious, right? I can be overly thinky and concerned with how I come off, I guess. And because I'm in a place where it's not me just directing myself and deciding all the things that I'm going to say and I'm going to do, it's somebody else, it's forced me to be like, well, okay, I wouldn't necessarily do this silly little bit, but they're asking me to do a silly little bit. And I've had to, this is so dumb, but I've had to analyze in the moment, why am I internally opposed to doing a joke here and to being silly here on camera? Why is that a thing that I have to wrestle with?
Yeah.
And so I'm grateful in that it's pushed me to like examine myself internally a little bit more and to try to loosen up in, you know, it's okay to do something that looks stupid. It's okay to be the one that like tried to make a joke and it didn't land, or does a silly thing that ends up on camera. That's, you know, I know that doesn't probably make sense to anybody else, but having to convince myself in the moment to like loosen up and just do the thing, because it's not going to hurt anything. And it's a stretching for you. It's a loosening of the way that you look at yourself and like what you're trying to show the outside. Like I try not to have a mask when it comes to other people, but at the same time, I have to admit that I'm very guarded about how I put off things, you know, like what the way other people see me, like it's calculated and it's on purpose and I want to be a certain way. And so I have this director who's silly and goofy and wants to do these little like jump in front of the camera and, you know, hold the thing and look at the camera this way. And it's like not something I would naturally do, but it is at the same time pushing me to do something I wouldn't naturally do. And so I'm grateful for that. And I didn't really expect to be grateful for that. So that's a long way around to say that I'm glad that I'm having that experience with that crew. I didn't expect it. So, yeah.
I am thankful for having something to do all the time. I really enjoy the fact that there's always something new to work on. There's always something new to draw. And that I have the tools to make the things that come into my head. So for most of my life, I've always, you know, I didn't have a lot of hobbies. It was mostly music or photography. And you can't always play guitar all the time or try to write music. You need these little breaks. And so with what we do is, 1 week I might be making a cabinet, and then the next week I'm making a silly wall lit sign. And so it's completely different. I'm using different parts of my brain, and I just enjoy having something to look forward to all the time.
Nice. Yeah, I agree with that.
Well, I'm trying to come up with something real poignant, but just in general, I'm just thankful to be able to do what I still do. I'm thankful that the sponsors are sticking with me. I'm thankful for my core audience, although, you know, our audience is expanding, contract, but there are several people that are always there, and you know who you are, and we talk quite a bit. And my patrons, I just want to say thank you all for sticking with me. You get to keep me here playing around doing what I do. I'm thankful that I had the opportunity with Weaver Leather to discover something later in life that I'm happy to do, playing with leather work, doing leather. And now that I have my leather shop, I spend a lot of time there. It's very meditative for me to just go up there and sit around and just look at what's around. And I notice when it comes to leather, a lot of people end up surrounding themselves with lots of material and they get intimidated. And that's one thing I have to keep reminding myself. Don't be intimidated by this hide. Cut it. Get into it. Just cut it up. Whatever. They'll make more cows. Don't worry about it. They'll make more cows. So I'm thankful that Weaver Leather has afforded me the opportunity to basically develop a whole new skill set.
And my vegetarian wife is screaming at her car speakers right now.
Who is?
His vegetarian wife.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, I mean, they constantly remind us that, like, they don't raise cows to make the leather. They raise the cows to make beef. And this is just the leftover parts. So.
It's funny. You said
that makes it any better. But.
Yeah. Same thing in a different direction. But you said something a second ago about you. I can't remember how you said it now. Like trying not to be intimidated. And it's funny because I cannot imagine Jimmy Duresta being intimidated by anything.
There's moments in time where you're looking at a slab, or you're looking at a pile of steel, or you're looking at leather in particular, because you have these big, beautiful hides and you want to just stick it on the wall. It's like a piece of art without anything having been done to it. And every little strip, every little scrap I save, and usually I just save it until somebody shows up that wants it and I just give it away. But, you know, it's also out of respect. This sounds goofy, but it's out of respect to the animal. You know, you want to do something good with it. You don't want to, that's kind of more of like a spiritual thing, but I'm not that far into that. But you don't want to disrespect this living thing. Yeah. So there's all that goes into it. You don't want to just like cut it and then go, throw it away. You know, you just like cut into a piece of material and you're like, oh, Bob and I had a conversation this week with Paul over at Copper Pig about failure. I never can remember, but I guess I have had the experience because it feels real to me, where you cut into a piece of wood and you're just like, this is bad. And you just stick it on the wall. Oh, that happened the other day, in fact, but this really was, I wouldn't consider this failure. This big chunk of wood, I was trying to cut a couple of small pieces off of it. And as I stuck it through the saw, it kept binding the saw. And so I pull it out and push it in again, and it binded up the saw. And I pull it out and stick it in again, and it binds up the saw. Each time I'm going deeper and deeper. It's a 2-inch thick piece by about 6 inches wide. It's a piece of rough cut, but it's been thoroughly dry. And I keep sticking it. And then all of a sudden, it's like the cut is deep enough, about 12 or 15 inches in. And at the end, looks like two toes that are crossed like this. The wood was so binded up. I pulled it. I struggled to pull it out past the riving knife. And then it just like looked like your big toe and your little toe just crossed at the very end. And I was like, this piece of wood is useless. And I just stuck it on the wall with a 20-inch cut in it. I was like, forget it. I'm not going to be able to use this. Even if I do get a straight cut out of it, it's not going to be straight because it's already cut halfway down and it's curling up on top of the other side. So that's a long, stupid story to say. It's, you never want to just cut into a piece of material and just give up on it, you know? So I would never do that with a piece of leather. I did give up on that piece of wood, though. Now it's firewood.
Still it's purpose, serving though. Its purpose.
Yeah, it serves a purpose. It's going to give me a couple of BTUs.
Yeah.
A couple of BTUs.
No.
Cool. Any other thoughts on this?
Well, just like I said, I'm just thankful that the audience has stuck with us all this time. Here on this show, and then my own personal social media adventure. So,
yeah,
thank you.
Yeah, even for sure.
YouTube,
I think
even though YouTube forgot who I am, I'm thankful for YouTube.
It feels like these, you know, I'm thankful that I can go through these video project changes with changing my philosophy on what I want to make, and then there's just a core group of people who are always there and always want to see what I do or what we do. And that is just absolutely amazing. You know, there are people that pay monthly to be on my Patreon because they just want to support me.
Yeah.
That's bonkers. Yeah. That is absolutely crazy.
Yes.
Yep. I agree. That is pretty wild because they, you know, they don't really get anything for that other than they just want to help what we do continue, which is pretty wild.
Yeah. Absolutely amazing.
Yeah. I think one of the things around that whole idea that I'm really grateful for over this last year is that I think I've felt the freedom even more to be able to change stuff, you know, and to be able to try to make videos about the things that I want, even knowing that they're not going to perform, they're not going to reach a lot of people, it's not going to be something that, as I know, people are not going to care as much about, but I still have the freedom to do that. And that it's not lost on me that, you know, there's enough there for me to be able to do something I know is not going to perform well, but it is still enough to sustain what I'm doing. I think that's a lot, you know, just due to that type of support that you're talking about, money support, but also just people being there, just people showing up to watch. And so I'm grateful for that freedom that I realize a lot of people do not have in their jobs or in their careers to be able to just work in the stuff that is for them on a regular basis, you know?
Yep.
Yeah. I'm also grateful that I've gotten to do some more music this year. I mentioned before that my daughter recorded a song. She wrote a song and we recorded it. And so being able to sit down with her and spend my time making something for her and trying to, you know, like it's been interesting because I've recorded a lot of music in my life, but it's always been something I wrote or something I wrote with other people. And so I was really invested in, you know, this is the idea. Like it has to sound like this and we had to get to that thing. And with her, it's been more of a, what do you want this to sound like? And how can I help you get to that thing? Like, I don't really know what your goal is here. I don't know, when you hear the finished product in your head, does it have these instruments? Does it build here? Does it, you know, I don't know what the thing is you're going for. And so it's been a really different take on the same mechanics of recording and adding extra stuff, but the final goal of it is not in my head. So I'm trying to help somebody else find that goal for them, which has been, and it's my daughter. So that's amazing as well.
Yeah. But
really grateful that I've gotten to do that this year and we're, you know, wanting to do some more. So that's pretty great. We've talked for several years, even like Jenny and I talked before the kids were even old enough to do this. We've talked about recording a Christmas song like every year. And it always gets to like the beginning of December and we go, oh, we should have done a Christmas song this year. Oh, well, you know, it's like it's like the three of us and our postcard. So, oh, yeah, we should do the thing. Maybe next year. But so we're actually at a place where we could pull that off this year, but I don't know that we will.
Saturday. You're open on Saturday.
Yeah, I am. Yeah, I should probably do it Saturday. Yeah. Well, so, yeah. Any other thoughts on this?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're all grateful for lots of stuff.
Yes.
And all the obvious stuff, my family, you know, my home, my faith, all those things are givens. So don't hear me ignoring those things.
Of course.
Then I'm not thankful for those. It's just, you know, we were talking in the context of.
Oh, one stupid thing I'm thankful for. I just in front of me to remind me. So clearing out my dad's house, obviously, the last year, it seems like we might be selling it in the next couple of weeks. Mm. And that's that. No sentimental value attached to that house other than the stuff inside of it. But the other day I found this thumb drive. My dad was meticulously organized when it came to photos and songs. His house was a wreck. But this little 32 gigabyte chip I found wrapped in tape. And I peeled the tape off it. And I'm like, I wonder what it's mine. It's probably something I made in the city's workshop. And I stuck it in my computer. And it's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pictures broken into categories. It says Jimmy's, and it's like Jimmy's awning, this thing I made in the Lower East Side. I don't have pictures of it. It's on here. It's all pictures that I might have sent him or that he took himself when he visited me.
Oh, wow.
Trips to my house, pictures of each one of his grandkids as they were babies growing up. This dumb thing has probably like 10,000 pictures on it. And they're all really small, you know, because it's the beginning of digital photography. The pictures go back to like the week I bought this house. 21 years
wow.
ago. And they end somewhere around like 2014. And it's just like he probably was just like, you know what? Let me just back up these pictures on this other hard drive. But they're all categorized. So we're going to have a really fun day tomorrow showing everybody these pictures that
that's
just randomly wow. find.
That's an amazing little gift.
So this is like, this little thing in my hand is like a shoebox full of pictures.
Mm, yeah.
Crazy. Had no idea what it was when I found it. I just had it like on a shelf. I must have grabbed it leaving his house in the last 2 years. And I was like, oh, I'll look at that later. And I forgot all about it.
Very cool.
Thanks, Dad.
Well, I'm going to thank our Patreon supporters since we are thankful. Huge thanks to everybody over at Patreon for supporting the show and for helping us out and for helping us do, you know, what we do both here and on YouTube. Like we're legitimately grateful to everybody over there that makes this possible. Huge thanks to everybody at every level, but also huge thanks to the people that go above and beyond way more than they need to. But we're really grateful for the support. That's Works by Solo, Warren Works, the new Janky Workshop, Scott at Dad It Yourself DIY, Rich at Low End Design, Pete Rondo at Glory Day Amusements, Odin Leather Goods, Nick Ryan, Michael Menegin, Matthias Garnell, Corey Ward, Chad from Mancrafting, Albers Woodworks, and A Pretty Big Deal, Inc. But also people like, where'd my Safari go? Also people like Andrew Norton. Andrew's been supporting since 2019. Thanks, Andrew. Grateful for that. Everybody gets the after show, which is a separate podcast we record after this one. That's where we get the name, after show. And it's available only through Patreon. So you go to patreon.com/makingit, sign up at any level you want, and you can get the after show. It's an RSS feed you can put in your podcast player. You get links to the YouTube videos for the after show. You can go watch the main show, the after show over there, if you're interested. Thank you all very, very much. You guys got anything to recommend this week?
I got something. Do you guys know who Christopher Hitchens is? He's dead. He's been dead for a while.
Don't think so.
He was he's a British journalist and world-renowned atheist and political commentator. He's been dead since 2011, but now with the advent of AI, he's alive again. And he has a very specific voice and a very specific point of view. And there's a YouTube channel called Christopher Hitchens is Resurrected. And it's actually really good. If you don't know who he is, I mean, maybe you'd be enlightened to him. He's not Republican or Democrat. He's like sort of, what is the other one? The one Republican, Democrat, not independent, but like what Ron Swanson is.
Libertarian.
He's kind of a libertarian in a way. And, he takes down Trump. He takes down everybody, but he's not alive anymore. So this is an AI version of him. Hmm. But it's great to listen to. It's just a cartoon of him.
Where is it coming from? If it's not,
that's him.
I mean, like, who is writing it?
Somebody. Let me see.
See, that's pretty. I don't know. I have a problem with that.
Oh, I know. I know. It's definitely controversial. What would Christopher Hitchens have to say about current events? Welcome to a unique thought experiment. What if the sharpest voices of the past could weigh in on today's debate? This channel explores the idea of recreating a satirical AI-generated version of Hitchens, one of the most formidable public intellectuals of our time, inspired by blah, 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 Oxford, blah, 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 blah. Goes on. Anyway, it's interesting. I know it's not, he's not alive, so it can't be possibly real. But this is where AI is going. You can't trust anything anymore. Anything you see. Anything you see. And everyone says, I can tell. But it's happened so fast from the time we saw Will Smith eating spaghetti to now. That was 2 years, not even 2 years. It's indecipherable. And if it's not already indecipherable, it will be in 2 months from now. So anyway, check out Christopher Hitchens Resurrected. I'll send you guys the link to the channel. If you like.
Mine is slightly less controversial. And
that's good. I've always liked Christopher Hitchens before he died. I mean, I kind of discovered him right when he died, because he died. Then I started YouTubing him and finding clips and reading some of his articles. That's it. Go ahead.
So my video is titled "The Best Thing I've Ever Made" by Sean Boyd Made This. It's this record cabinet. Version 2.0 of this record cabinet that he made. And I love that it's inspired by the 80s and 90s record cabinets, like what you would get from Sears. They had the smoked glass doors and the fake wooden panels. That's he's using that for inspiration, but his came out way cooler and way better. And it's got a built-in record player on top. It's so cool.
He makes some really cool stuff, like his projects.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that is cool. It looks like a 3D printer from the thumbnail.
Yeah.
That's pretty wild. Huh, awesome. Mine is a video. I don't even know who made this video. I didn't pay that much attention, but it's called Building a Machine to Sort Millions of Lego Bricks. And this is something that I have, you know, spent time researching in the past and stuff, so I guess that's probably why it got shown to me. But this... let's see, it's called Lego Spencer, and basically they're the channel that are like collaborating on it or whatever. But it's about 10 minutes, and it's just this guy talking about his process for building this crazy machine that uses computer vision to look at Lego bricks that are going down a conveyor belt, and it figures out what they are and then has these little arms that come out and sorts them into different bins. But he's trying to make something that can be extensible, so you could just add an infinite number of bins to sort pieces into things. But he's also trying to make it so that you could collapse it down and travel with it, or have somebody build it completely on their own. So he's open sourcing the whole thing. And it's really interesting to see the process that somebody goes through to come up with something so mechanical and so... it's very specific. But I've spent a lot of time trying to come up with a similar idea. It's different, but it's similar, and I've got a long way to go. So watching somebody actually get something that works is pretty motivating for me. Anyway, go check that out if you're interested.
Didn't you make some sort of analog Lego separator at one time?
Mm-hmm. I've made a couple. Yeah, like sorters where you kind of shake them and they mm-hmm. fall through different filter holes and stuff. Yeah. And I started working on one that was more mechanical. And I just got to a point where I was like, all right, I can't put any more time into this right now. I got to do other projects. So it's paused, but you know, one of these days, cool. You guys got anything else for this week?
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Happy Thanksgiving. Be thankful.
Yeah, be thankful always. And if you're not in the US, happy Thursday. All right, cool. Thanks for being with us, everybody. We'll catch you next time.
Love you. Thank you.